Welcome to episode 2 of our Men in the Early Years podcast mini-series. In episode 1, we set the scene with Jeremy from the Fatherhood Institute, and we were joined by Ian and Tony, who are childcare practitioners, to discuss why gender diversity is so important. We now move the conversation on to talking about recruitment challenges. Jeremy, picking up on what you said about recruitment in particular, I think thinking about the early years settings and what they can be doing to support this agenda, really. So are there some things that you think, you know, whether you're a large nursery or whether you're an individual childminder who's thinking about taking on an assistant, things that you might be thinking about, well, how can I make a difference? What sort of things could I be doing?
So, I mean, it sounds obvious, but promote yourselves to boys and men. And that means being explicit about doing that, about welcoming men, about reaching out to them, about finding ways to pull them into the work. So if you adopt a kind of neutral approach, you probably won't get men interested, because the soup that we all are swimming in tells us that this is women's work. So if we want to change that, we have to explicitly make it clear that that's not the case. And so I think there are lots of things that individuals and organizations can do, and you can do this yourself, to audit what you do through the lens of gender. I think we need to build a vision of what child-centered early years education might look like and think about what workforce we need to deliver it, and understand that that could and should include men. And once you have that vision, you can then set about making small changes to how you recruit, who gets to hear about job vacancies, for example. Often it feels like vacancies are talked about, you know, in the playground, let's say, or in parent networks. And of course, most of the time, what we mean by that is actually women's networks, you know? So if we want men to hear about vacancies and opportunities, we need to actually go and find them and tell them. Go to where the men are. Don't expect them to come to you, because they probably won't. I think that's kind of really where we need to start from. And I suppose through the Mighty campaign, we've created a bunch of resources that can help individuals and organizations to do that. So we have a Mighty charter, for example, which sets out very clearly a rationale, as I've been describing, for why we want men. And I know that sounds really basic, but actually, when you sit down and read the charter, I think it is actually quite a significant shift in thinking for lots of people. And it's a tool that you can use within your team and to show to parents and to build from, as a way of starting to tell the story of early years to a male audience, as well as to the sort of standard female audience.
Yeah, and for people who don't know MITEI as an acronym, can you just explain to us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so MITEI stands for Men in the Early Years. So it's MITEY. And it's a campaign and network that we launched about 3 or 4 years ago. And it's all free. And basically, if you go to the MITEI website, which is MITEI.org, you'll find out more about it. But on there, you'll find the MITEI Charter. You'll find a guide to recruiting men. You'll find a guide to communicating with parents about men in the workforce. There's a guide for careers advisors. There are case studies of men who work in early years. And so really what the website and the network exists for is to turn gender diversification of the early years workforce into a clearly defined national problem, and to try to create solutions to it. So there are lots of different ways that we try to influence change, trying to lobby government, running projects. For example, at the moment, I'm working on a project with Kids Planet Nurseries in Greater Manchester, which is all about trying to get young men into early years apprenticeships. It's a conduit, I suppose, for lots of different ways of trying to tackle this very thorny challenge.
Yeah, thank you, Jeremy. I'm going to move on just to thinking about, you mentioned careers advisors in there and some of the resources that you've got. And at Pacey, we've been doing some work for the past 3 years with Job Centre Plus, and helping those staff that work within job centres to understand the different types of childcare, and particularly around childcare funding. And one of the things we picked up with Jeremy's help as well, isn't it, Jeremy, is to think about how we talk to those people who are directly having conversations with those that are about to either restart work or thinking about careers, and the kind of opportunities that are available to them as well. So are there any sort of tips really from the careers aspect and thinking about job centres, particularly, Jeremy, that you wanted to share?
Yeah, so I think what we need Job Centres Plus and careers advisors more generally to be doing is to think about every man as a potential professional caregiver and educator. So every man who walks through the door could be persuaded, even if he doesn't instantly present himself as you know, wanting this as a career. Chances are he's never thought about it, because nobody will have talked to him about it. And he will, for however long he's been on the planet, nobody will have done that. So I think there's a lot to be said for being really systematic about suggesting early years as a career to men. And to thinking about, you know, when you sit down with a man, and you go through whatever your normal routine would be in terms of suggesting careers, to be open to the idea that, you know, men are just as valid to be in this space as women are. So especially if they're a father, for example, that, you know, in lots of cases, that will be a massive part of how that man spends his time, how he defines himself, you know, his identity and so on. And he may have a lot of hands-on experience already of looking after children. He may love spending time with children, his own and other people's. And it could be that your conversation with him would be enough to inspire him to think of that as something to build on as a career. So, you know, if you think that more than 80% of men become fathers at some point in their lifetime, and most of them do a substantial amount of kind of caregiving and educating, that's a big pool of men. I'm not saying only fathers could be qualified for this stuff, but, you know, if we think about the the skills and qualities that we want for people to work with children. A lot of those skills and qualities might be highlighted through parenthood, but they might come from other types of work too. You know, we need people with energy, with emotional intelligence, creativity, listening skills, patience, the ability to inspire people. Well, that kind of stuff can come from lots of different work experience. So I think we need to move away from the idea that finding men who would be interested in this work is like finding a needle in a haystack. I think the men are there. I think it's that we need to shift our thinking and kind of create space for them to consider it.
Yeah, the challenge is, some of the stereotypical perceptions, I think, are that possibly it's more a female orientated position. So more women who work within childcare, especially at a young age. I mean, I saw that myself through teaching when I went into primary schools, and most of the staff there were female, and the same when I went to some of the courses for child minding assistants and first aid courses and the safeguarding courses, child protection. Predominantly, I would be probably one of the only males there, or maybe one or two others compared to sort of 16, 20 sort of female childminders or childminding assistants. So yeah, there was definitely a lot more weight towards sort of female representation in those areas. I think some of my colleagues teaching secondary school and then sort of going to then teach younger children, I think some colleagues maybe thought, wondered what I was doing. Others, especially in the PE sort of background, could see the advantage of actually supporting children from a young age and developing some of the skills at the roots and from the early stages, could then obviously impact later on, which is what you see in PE at a later stage, is you sometimes realise that some children maybe don't have some of the core skills at a young age. So it was something obviously I could then see and experience and assist with at a much younger age than what I was used to and what I trained initially to do in secondary school.
I think it's just the perception, isn't it, that people just don't see it as a male role. Mm. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, people in the groups around childminding as well, like Pacey Early as Wales and things like that. And most of the time, I tend to deal with females. It's very rare that there's, you know, a male working for those either, which, you know, may have an effect. I don't know. But I think, yeah, it's just perception. People just think it's not, you know, it's not a job for a man, which is unfortunate because obviously there are an awful lot of men who would be very good at, you know, in childminding, which is obviously, you know, dominated by female workers. But I think it's the way that you perceive it. I mean, when people ask me, you know, how come you're a childminder? Surely that's a woman's job. I'm just like, well, I'm a childminder because I enjoy being with children and I get on well with children. So therefore it makes sense. You know, you can have plenty of women who don't get on well with children and they would never consider being a childminder. And there's plenty of men who do get on with children. So it makes sense for the people to pick the role that matches them rather than their gender.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I think one of the things it's tricky, isn't it, in a environment where recruitment is a real challenge for the sector and trying to and a kind of race to find staff. And I was speaking to someone today actually about that they haven't lost the idea that actually it's the right people and it's not just a case of getting a person in so you can maintain your ratios. It has to be the quality of that particular person that's being employed, isn't it? So we're kind of we're talking about this at a backdrop in which recruitment is tricky for the sector and it's a challenging time. So, but allowing the time and space to think about it is crucial, really, isn't it? And to allow those opportunities to, you know.
I think so. And you're right, you know, we need the right people. And if we're serious about gender diversification, I think we have to recognize that men might need different support, you know? Men and women do not come at this from the same place. Men can lack confidence. They can lack the skill, the hands-on skills. You know, if you've got a man who's never changed a nappy, for example, what do you do with him? Do you exclude him entirely because he's never changed a nappy? Or do you spend a little bit of time with him, supporting him to get good at that? I would say do the latter. If you know, on balance, he's coming to you with an awful lot of skills and qualities that make you feel like he has potential. You know, numbers of nappies changed, I would say, is not the be all and end all of whether or not you're going to be a good early years practitioner. So I do think there's something here about committing yourself to a vision of a diverse workforce and doing what's needed to level the playing field, if you like, so that men have a chance of participating. I think that's what we do in as we were talking before about STEM subjects, for example. I think that's what we do when we support girls and women into careers that are traditionally male. We don't just throw them in and expect them to operate in exactly the same way as men. And so I feel like we need to create the space for that to happen in early years too.
Yeah, and it links back, doesn't it, to training and to qualifications and apprenticeships and all of those qualification routes that come in, which, as we've already said, is complicated and tricky to navigate anyway. But the kind of the support mechanisms around gaining those qualifications and having that hands-on experience within a setting is crucial, isn't it, to be able to develop those skills regardless of your gender. You need that support and that input to, you know, improve your knowledge and your skills and your understanding to be able to be a good practitioner. So I think it, yeah, you know, all the way through from the very, as you say, from the recruitment stage, or even prior to that, to the kind of the qualification stage and that route into the sector, is having that approach from the people that are delivering those qualifications and training to understand that the value of that too. So I think we've touched, Jeremy, on quite a few of the barriers, I think, for men. Is there anything else in terms of the barriers that you think that exist from your point of view, if there's anything we've missed, really, that makes it a real tough journey for somebody to enter the workforce?
I mean, I think we need to recognise that because we're starting from such a low base, that the reality is that we're at 3% now as a proportion of the workforce. Even where settings are very committed to this agenda and they work really hard and they change their systems and so on and so on, and they get a man or men into apprenticeships or whatever the role is, we have to recognize that the chances are that guy or those guys are going to be on their own, or in a, you know, there's going to be very few of them. If you're in a big organization, you might have a handful or maybe 10 if you're really big, And day to day, they are living in a world that can feel quite alien, almost hostile.
Yeah, quite fortunate in a way, where ours is a family setting. I felt a lot more comfortable. It wasn't as if I was going into a nursery or another setting where I wasn't familiar with the staff or the sort of location or where I was working from, because it was from an extension to our home. Then it felt a lot more comfortable, and that helped.
There's so much here to think about and reflect on. Hopefully you can join us for episode 3, where we're going to move on to think about the influence of parental views and the impact that has on men in the sector.